Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Welcome back to the Troop Leader Experience Podcast. I have another guest this week, and I am super excited to introduce you. So without further ado, actually, will you please, dear guest, introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, what your role is, and a little bit about your troop.
Yeah, for sure. Hi, my name is Ashley Hill. I am the 01 troop leader for Troop 672. We are located in Middle Tennessee, so our council is the Girl Scouts of Middle Tennessee. Our troop is a little non-traditional. We have 63 girls in our troop. We are a multi-level troop, K-5, but the troop number actually sits with and stays with our elementary school here. Girls will join at any age, K-5, and then when they move into middle school, they'll actually start with their own new troop number. And I have a remarkable group of, we call them, we're all just the same. We're leaders, but on paper, they're O2 leaders that take over each of those levels. So I'm really lucky in that sense. I have been a troop leader for a couple of years. I started early on when my daughter was a daisy and have become a troop leader since then. She's a junior now. And that's the feel and flow of troop leadership for us at 672.
Wow. Okay. I have so many questions. And yeah. If you have listened to this podcast for a while, I think it's been a couple of years since we've had what I call a super troop, although yeah. I think that's outdated information because in the Facebook group, it sounds like super troop is actually like some kind of pseudo official name now for a program. But to me, this is old school. This is what I call a super troop. It's been a while since we've had them. But if you've been listening to this podcast for long enough that you heard the last time we had a super troop leader on, I am fascinated by super troops. This is my Girl Scout dream to have an enormous troop and just like this big phenomenon happening. But anyway, okay. So I think you said 63 girls in your troop. That is, so they're all in elementary school.
They are. Yep.
And your troop leaders are like level leaders. So they move up from level leader to level leader until they go into their next troop in middle school. Is that accurate?
Exactly. Yep. And of those level leaders, typically my daughter's a junior and will bridge out next year from 672, one of those level leaders will become the new kind of 01 administrator over the whole troop. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's back way up with your experience with Girl Scouting. So you mentioned you started when your daughter was a daisy. Were you a Girl Scout when you were growing up?
I was, and I'm old enough to not have been a daisy. We were just brownies. The daisies weren't even a thing yet. I'm dating myself, but I was a brownie. I never became a junior, and I can't remember if that's because we just didn't have our troop didn't continue, or if that was a one-time thing that my mom, that's great, and now we'll move on to sports. But yeah, I have memories of doing Girl Scouting and earning all the badges. I'm an Enneagram 3, so it really just built into who I am for sure.
Yeah, I'm an Enneagram 3 as well. That's so funny. Yeah. Okay. So what was I'm having trouble getting this question out. Okay. One of the things that fascinates me in the Girl Scout research is the impact that Girl Scouts can have, even if you are in Girl Scouts for a short time, for 1 year, 2 years, something like that. And so I'm curious what you feel your kind of impression, if you can remember, because now it's been a while, of what Girl Scouts was around the time that your daughter was old enough to consider putting her into daisies. Were you sure, yes, she's absolutely going to be a Girl Scout? How did that come up?
Yeah, no, I think so. What I remember from Girl Scouts is the earning badges and the getting experience outside of what typically happens in a classroom. Spoiler alert, I was a teacher for 7 years and would still be today if I didn't have the job I do have now. And I value the classroom experience as much as I value the outside the classroom experience. And so for us, when we were deciding what sort of experiences she should have in the after school space, Girl Scouts was one that I thought she's going to get some badge experience. Badges is what drives me, but really like those life skills and those life experiences that she wouldn't get necessarily in her classroom. And that's what I remembered from being a Girl Scout. And I will tell you that by the end of, I don't know, maybe her third meeting, the only thing that was foundational to me at that point was she felt like she belonged to a group of people and she belonged to herself because she was growing in this confidence. And so I will say the impetus to start Girl Scouts was, oh my gosh, all the fun things she's going to get to do and to learn and these neat outside of school experiences I remember as a brownie. And then by the third meeting, I was like, oh my, I don't remember. I don't know that I remember being this level of built into these friendships like she had developed in Girl Scouts. So yeah.
That is so beautiful. And yeah. I like that there was a brand impression, if you will, on you from your brief or experience in Girl Scouts, that it was still high impact enough that you had an association that it was a positive thing for a girl to be involved in. But then also hammering home that short-term impact is that you just mentioned for your own daughter as a parent, you witnessed after three meetings an impact. So I think the reason why I'm hung up on this is I think sometimes it is hard. Turnover in general is just hard. And we can look internally as troop leaders and question, what could I have done differently? How can I improve retention? How do I keep girls in, especially as they get older? And I think giving ourselves a little bit of grace for the impact that we do make, even when a girl is only in our troop for a brief time, the opportunity is just so huge to be able to have a lasting impact on not just their childhood, but also into adulthood and eventually maybe their relationship with their own kids. So
yeah,
I think that's really special. And it's maybe we can be less hard on ourselves if a girl does not come back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So what made you get involved on the volunteer level and why do you continue to come back to keep doing it?
So so what happens when you are in a troop that is large is you have those level leaders, but you also have the need for parent support to stay within ratio at the bare minimum, but also because you just really can't, younger girls especially, really do well when there are multiple people there to help them with some of these activities. And so the level leader at the time, I was serving as a volunteer, did not share that I was a previous educator or that I had education experience in the special education field especially. And I sat in on a meeting and just did what I would assume a regular volunteer would do. And then Christina is her name. She said, you should come back and do this some more. And so I signed up for another one. And then by the end of that year, she was like, do you know what? I think you should maybe be a level leader. And then I was hooked. And then fast forward 2 years into that, at the end of our second year, my daughter was really excited that I was there all the time. She was just really proud that her mom was a co-leader. And then that O1 leader bridged out to middle school, and there was a hole to fill. And I thought, if the troop is having such a big impact on my daughter, especially, I want to be up. I have this skill set. I can maybe help for a little bit. It worked out that I volunteered for something small, and then I don't know, the Girl Scout bug bit me and here I am.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
What would you say is one of your proudest moments as a Girl Scout volunteer?
Let's see. There are a lot of small moments that make me feel super proud. I think one of the things that our troop especially is really good at is this building community. I think that's foundational to us. I know that there are some troops in our council and our service unit where they go hiking and that's their thing. But for us, it's really around building community. And so when I can witness moments of that in a very raw and beautiful form, it's really great. We have a couple of scouts. We have a number of scouts who have visible and invisible disabilities. And one of the things that makes me the most proud is how the whole troop, especially at those grade level bands, but our junior scouts for now especially, know and understand each other well enough that they can walk into a space, whether we're, you know, on a field trip or we're going camping or we're just having a troop meeting, and they notice and are perceptive enough to see this isn't going to be a space that this particular scout can encounter well, or I'll need to help in this space, or I will need help in this space. And as a human being encountering a world myself, seeing those skills lacking in a lot of the adults that I interact with, who are lovely individuals, but sometimes can't read a room or see or know humanity in that way is actually really profound for fourth and fifth graders. And even when they were in first or kindergarten, they were building those skills. So it makes me really proud when they demonstrate what community really means on this fundamental level. And it happens all the time. We're just at cookie booths and there's not a curb cut for this particular scout to be able to participate. And so what are we going to do? We're going to go figure out why there's not a curb cut here. Or can we move our booth a different spot? There's things that are lifelong lessons that they're learning on their own because we've built this foundation of community, but also because we empower them to take that ownership, right? It's not an adult noticing those things. It's kids who are like, wait a second, this could be better.
Yeah, I think what you say is there's a couple of kind of things, I guess, mentions that you said that really stand out for me. And I know looking back at, I'll call it being a kid, although I guess it's like the cusp. But when I was in college, I was in a sorority and one of my sorority sisters has muscular dystrophy and she was a wheelchair user, is a wheelchair user, but I don't know her anymore. We're Facebook friends. God, that sounds so weird. However, this needs to be edited to make it sound like I'm not being mean or friendly. Anyways, so she is a wheelchair user, and that impacted how we planned things. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's like things that when she wasn't part of our, even within the larger sorority, within the communities within the sorority, when she hadn't previously been part of that group before she joined, we may not have thought about accessibility things in the same way. And it led to us seeing the accessibility and lack thereof in just everyday life. And it is a lifelong impact of then having a new level of awareness that you wouldn't have if you didn't have that experience to that side of life, as however you phrased it, same kind of thing. And you had mentioned this when we found a time to actually record this. And so I have a couple questions around kind of Girl Scouts and disabilities. I'm wondering, I know this is something that can be really overwhelming for adults who sign up to be volunteers, but they don't have experience making sure that their space is inclusive for girls and their families in this way. So what suggestions or tips or best practices do you have for helping leaders with kind of training or getting more comfortable and confident that they can do it?
Yeah. So a little bit more, I guess, a little deeper in the background of who I am and how I come into spaces with Girl Scouts is that I actually work for the Tennessee Council on Developmental Disabilities. And so I am steeped in this work, but there's a council in every state that can provide some level of like training or point you to where training could be. So on a bigger level, that's one for sure. I think there is sometimes a perception from leaders that if I do something wrong, if I set up a meeting incorrectly, if I choose the wrong space and I'm going to deeply and hurt someone or offend someone because I haven't made it inclusive. I forgot about this one piece. And I think right off the bat, knowing that everyone is human, I think there's this idea that I'm not sure really how to break this down, but we are all human. So one of the quotes from the DD Act, which is the Developmental Disabilities Act, which is what funds and determines our council, is disability is a natural part of the human occurrence. That's just who we are as humans. At some point, we're going to experience disability. And whether or not you can see a disability or can't see a disability, or whether you have a disability now or develop one later, everyone has this level of need. And so if you walk into a space and you are just aware of or are open to asking questions of the girl who might have a disability or is having trouble encountering a space or the materials that you're using or an activity that you've planned, having that level of dialogue and being open about that is probably the very best thing that a leader can do. And I know that feels super overwhelming because you don't want to do the wrong thing as a leader, but it's actually a really good thing to get something wrong and to show girls that you can make a mistake and then you can figure out how to make it better. For us, parents are very good partners with us, communicate really well with our parent group. So our scouts' parents, this is what we're planning to do. Does this make sense? Is there something we could do better? Is there something we could do different? And at this point in our Girl Scout journey, we're junior level scouts, our scouts ask those same questions because they're watching us do that. On a more, can I find a website that would tell me where to start and what to do? There are a lot of just overall disability websites that you could go to and look for. You could visit our Tennessee Council website. We have a whole section on behavior support. So thinking about kids who might have autism or who might have some other level of developmental disability that you are maybe experiencing some behaviors that seem a little not like everybody else, helping to coach kids how to interact with each other, that sort of way, is that's a great place to start. But if you start with the council in your state, so the Council on Developmental Disabilities in your state, they can definitely point you in directions of life skill disability help, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. I am not sure how to ask this question, but when it comes to more invisible disability, I love how you framed it as it's just humaning and that there's different degrees of being truly accessible and inclusive is really just making space for all the different kinds of humans there are. Mm-hmm. And like humans are diverse and we, this kind of idea that everyone is typical and then there are outliers versus like everyone is actually divergent of what is supposed to be typical. And for some people, it's easier to conform into this sort of stereotype of typical. And for other people, it's more challenging or not possible. But I think there's a whole episode that I was going to do, and hopefully I still will, about neurodiversity and neurodivergence and those terms and what they mean. And a huge theme in that was really similar to that kind of train of thought. But I guess what I'm wondering is, from that kind of line of thinking, sometimes there's something obviously very identifiable visually, and sometimes it is invisible, like you said, and sometimes there's just a spectrum of being unique and different for yourself. And from that standpoint, if you have a parent who tells you, hey, I know these things about my kid, and this is how, or a guardian, and this is how my tips for how to work through things, this is maybe depending on the specific situation, they lean in and are more involved as a volunteer, but either way, they can communicate really clearly with you. What about when a parent or guardian communicates nothing with you and you are just able to take notice that an activity or a space is not conducive to all girls being successful and included?
Yeah. So I'm thinking specifically about examples when maybe a girl has autism or some sort of communicative disability. I got stuck on that. Let's say that you have created a space for a girl and, or for your troop, and you are maybe, you're in my shoes, you have 63 girls and you have once a month, you have an all troop meeting and you have a scout who has some sensory issues or really doesn't want to communicate well. And so avoids that large space at the start of a meeting a lot, or will find ways to sneak away or will ask to go to the bathroom. As a leader, you're noticing this is not what other scouts are doing, and the scout's behavior is not like she's hiding, and she could be shy, she could be scared, but maybe it goes so far as to say like she's hiding in a classroom, or she gets into the big cafeteria space and she pushes over a table because she's just so overwhelmed. I think as a leader and really as a human, I would say that behavior is a form of communication of a need met or unmet, right? If she is acting in such a way that she can't encounter even the start of a space, and you're noticing that behavior should at its core be a level of communication. Something is wrong. Something's amiss. We're miscommunicating something. And so if you can have that conversation with a parent to say, I really want this. Do I want this space to be inclusive? I want her to encounter the rest of her troop, and it's becoming dangerous, or it's becoming a problem, or kids are talking about her. And I want to help them not to do that, or I want to help to guide her into that. There's two parts of that: a conversation with girls who are talking about other girls, but also how to start and stem those conversations for parents. If we take a step back from maybe even trying to label a disability, how do we how do we help that scout feel included? And it may be that that scout can't start a meeting in a big cafeteria with 60 other girls because it is overwhelming. Can we be creative in our thinking in that? And I think if you come to conversations with families in a solutions-oriented kind of frame of mind and really get at the core of, this is the feeling that I want every scout to have, and I'm so fearful that your scout is not going to have it. How can I bridge that gap for us? Or how can I have our troop bridge that gap for us? I think is even more powerful than just trying to take it on as one person. But I think it's also transparently true for other scouts who don't have maybe labels of disabilities. This scout is having a really hard time and is yelling all the time or is screaming, and I can't understand why. Maybe she hasn't had dinner yet. You've started your troop, ours troop, all's troop meeting starts at 6 p.m. and we have the dinner hour. And so if we don't have a snack, we have five-year-olds who are very cranky. But we know that going into it, right? That seems a little easier because we encounter that also as humans. And so sometimes it's difficult to anticipate if we maybe don't have experience in some of those other disabilities or other experiences that kids and families might have. So I'm not sure if that answered the question you were after.
I do have a follow-up. I want to dig deeper a little bit because, and like push further on this, because I think it's pretty safe to say anybody listening to this podcast, anybody who's listened, if this is your first episode, by the way, welcome. But anybody who's been listening to this podcast for even a couple of episodes, I feel very confident that I can say really wants to create this really high impact, really inclusive, really beautiful space that they're super proud of. And also, it's hard and we're volunteers and we just can't be equipped to do everything well. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I really try to do with this podcast is help with bridging that gap where for so many of us, we just are parents or I'm not even a parent and we sign up to do this. And then it's okay, here's a bunch of kids. Good luck. And you're sometimes with them. Sometimes you do a level leader thing, but sometimes you're with them from literally 5 years old until they're 18. And that is such a huge growth period. And the more they know you and the more they're close to you, the more complicated it gets. And it's hard. And I think we have this, we all want this beautiful idea of this diverse and inclusive high impact space where girls are getting this incredible experience and they're walking away as better humans. And we did that. And we're really proud of this. And I want to know when in a situation like that, when you go and try to communicate with a parent, hey, this is what I'm noticing, because maybe they haven't necessarily set any expectations with you, but you're noticing patterns and you go to them and you're trying to express, hey, this is what I'm witnessing. Do you have any suggestions about how to handle this? I really want to make sure that this space is really inclusive. What happens when the parent is either unresponsive or defensive, protective? They tell you it's you're the problem, maybe, or maybe they just really say nothing. Sometimes I think parents can, out of fear and defensiveness of their kid, if it's things especially as disruptive as like turning over tables and whatnot, then they want to say, oh, we don't witness that at home. This only happens at your troop. This she doesn't have this problem anywhere else. What do you do then? Because I know everyone listening to this is thinking, I really care about these kids and I want to do well, but I need your help.
Yeah, total. That is totally fair. I think in those situations, or even when a parent, you can't reach a parent, they don't return your phone calls, they don't text, that their kid just shows up because it's an after school program even. I think you as a leader decide first and foremost your level of comfort for how creative you're going to be to include this child who maybe doesn't have parents or a guardian system or a place in at home that is safe, or safe isn't maybe the right word, but is not active in their daily school life or doesn't even know what's happening after school or any of that, or a parent who is unwilling to help or partner with you to help their scout to stay involved. You as a volunteer should decide, this is the level I am willing to be creative before I tap out for help. And in our situation, we're really lucky to have a very strong service unit. It hasn't always been that way. I know for sure over the last 2 years, it's gotten even stronger, but I feel confident that I could go to other troop leaders in my service unit to say, I'm having this problem. I ultimately want this scout to be involved, but I don't know what else to do. And then obviously in our situation, we are out of the school district and have a pretty cool and close relationship with some of those teachers that are there that we could tap into educators who daily have interactions with scouts, that might be an option. It may not be, to be perfectly clear and frank. And then from there, we might go to our regional executive or any of our council level people to help us, because I think ultimately, especially in our council, the goal is always for a girl to have a place to feel like she belongs. And it may not be that if I have 63 girls in my troop, and that's just the way that it feels at this particular school, that may not be a good fit for a child who does have major sensory stuff. And if they don't have a parent who's then willing to be creative, or the troop isn't able to really accommodate this level of need that they have, there is still a place for that scout to get a positive experience in Girl Scouts. And I, as a volunteer, have to be able to ask for help from the levels that are available to me, whether it's the parent, service unit, our council at whole, so that I can, and then I have to be confident enough in myself to ask for help and then ask to let go of that. Do you know what I mean? There will be a spot for her to feel like she belongs in Girl Scouts. I feel confident of that in at least Middle Tennessee, even if it's not with us.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, and again, I'm asking this, your opinion on this, gently and with so much love, because I know that the intentions are good behind this, but what advice do you have for a troop leader who maybe had a vision or has done things a certain way of what kind of activities they were going to do with their troop and what it was going to look like? And then in the spirit of needing to be inclusive for girls who that vision really isn't realistic or accessible for, there's some maybe sadness and even grief in releasing that original vision, or feeling like it's not fair that we can't do these things, or can we do these things and just exclude this girl and this activity because there's other ways that she can be part of things, just not this one specific activity. Like, again, I'm assuming in all of those situations where it's always with the best of intentions of, and leading with love of wanting a certain kind of experience, and then feeling like I either have to choose between being inclusive and letting this go, or what this dream was that I had for this troop, or maybe that the girls had even expressed previously and now it's going to look different. What advice do you have for troop leaders when it comes to that?
So my pushback a little bit on that is, I think that as troop leaders, or at least in my personal experience, I have a vision for how a troop meeting will look, and it never looks that way. Because there are girls who are so excited and some who are not excited, and it doesn't always look the best that I wish that it would. And so I think a part of my encouragement to troop leaders would be to let girls be where they are in a lot of that. There may be times and situations where you want to take girls to Savannah. You want to go from, we're in Tennessee, you want to travel from Tennessee to Savannah, and you have girls who want to come who have some access or functional needs, like they need to bring their wheelchair with them, or they have a lot of medication that needs to travel with them, and so maybe they need to have an extra adult with them, whatever the case may be. I think I would encourage troop leaders, this is my own soapbox, to push for that radical inclusiveness. It seems absolutely unreal sometimes, right? I as a volunteer cannot do this, but there are supports, I think, across most councils that could help that, or even more than that, one of the biggest pieces of Girl Scouting for me is being an active member of your community. And if your community is not inclusive enough that every scout can go to your main library downtown or can't go hiking on the park trails, that is a huge project where troop could overcome and do. I know at least in the state of Tennessee, we have all-terrain wheelchairs that are brand new, but a scout with some functional needs that wants to go hiking with her troop at the state parks can do that because the state of Tennessee said that they want to make sure that their parks are accessible. And so I think bigger picture, if a scout is unable to interact with a troop space, she is also, and especially those field trip type spaces or those really big, lovely, beautiful camp experiences that we have in Middle Tennessee too, if she can't encounter those now, can she then encounter those when she gets a bit older? And probably not. And so I think it's like a microcosm of what I think our larger communities are like. I think as a volunteer, you get to decide, right? It's your time and your energy. And if you want to take your girls camping and there isn't a way for a scout who has some level of, maybe she has CP and doesn't use a wheelchair, but uses a walker, I think that's probably even more difficult than using a wheelchair, maybe in some of our camping settings, because walkers are really difficult on unpaved paths where wheels can sometimes travel. I think you get to decide ultimately whether you plan without her or ask parents to be that secondary person. But I really would encourage leaders to be creative about and think about bigger picture. How are you helping your troop see at a disadvantage for all, so that all can't attend? And how are you encouraging some creative thinking around how you can get to everyone participating?
Okay, I love that kind of reframe or zooming out of the perspective, because I addressed a question like this on an Ask Me Anything not that long ago. Within the last couple of months, I really am not sure how long ago it was, but I feel like it was recent, where someone was posing a question related to that. And I feel like that is a piece of it that I'm not sure I addressed. And so I'm so glad that you added that perspective. That's beautiful. So in the spirit of adventures and experiences, what is one of the coolest adventures and experiences you've done with your troop, or several?
Let's see. So we're really lucky that we have horses at our Girl Scout Camp Sycamore Hills in Ashland, Tennessee. And so anytime we go up there, our girls are just really excited to ride horses. I'm not a horse girl. I like things inside. So I'm a really good troop leader for troop meetings, but I have to really fake it till you make it if we go outside camping. I can camp. I have been there. I think one of the best experiences we probably had, though, was that we were able to do a camp out on the Sounds. They're the baseball team in Nashville, on Sound Stadiums on the field. It was a one and done for us because, again, I'm an indoor girl by nature, but they got to pitch their tents on in the outfield. They played a big movie on the big Jumbotron. They had the lights on until 1 a.m, but it's in downtown Nashville and you can see the Nashville skyline behind us as we're pitching these tents. And it was absolutely incredible. It's something that our girls talk about a lot. But again, I'm old and it's 1 a.m. and it's and we're still pitching a tent after a baseball game. And it was a lot, but it was a really cool thing that our girls talk about a lot. And I think as a troop leader, if I'm not talking to another troop leader, I'm like, yeah, we got to camp on the baseball field. It was pretty fantastic. But if you've ever been a troop leader, you know how much that is actually exhausting to do.
Yeah, it's what a cool adventure. But then also while you're living it, you're like, this is a lot. This is just a lot. Okay, what is one of your craziest or silliest Girl Scout memories?
Oh, goodness. Let's see. So we're in the end of cookie season in Middle Tennessee, and our troop, again, we have a lot of girls, and so we have a lot of cookies. And so our initial order is typically 700, 800 cases of cookies. And I don't know if anybody's seen what that looks like. It's a lot of cookies that we have to put on a truck and then take off a truck. And so we have built some really fun castle level, some building structures with these huge cases of cookies, and we're unloading them off of the truck. So that's probably it. It's always really fun to see a new Daisy's face when she walks into where she's going to come pick up her cookies. And she's, are you kidding? That's a lot of cookies. Yes, that's actually, it is really ridiculous. I don't know that we have circus level or anything super silly, but that's probably it.
Have photos of your kind of cookie delivery, any of the stacks or structures? Would it be okay? Do you have pictures you can share that we could put in the Facebook group? Okay. If you're not in our Facebook group, it's facebook.com/Girl Scout Podcast is the page. And then there's a button to join the group, by the way, if you're listening to this. But I would love to throw some photos in there because that sounds really cool to see. And how fun. I actually did not think about how you do cookie pickup and distribution. So I'm also really curious to hear, you mentioned about picking up and loading up a truck and then unloading a truck. Where do you keep them? Who handles that? And also, how do you handle the at least initial distribution to the troop, let alone the ongoing, you're like your own cookie cupboard.
Yeah, we are a small business, and I am not a business-minded person. I am the most lucky troop leader to have a co-leader who she's just magical with Excel sheets and like logistics. It's incredible. Her name is Amy, and she's just incredible. So we have drawn to U-Haul. I think there are a lot of troops that do this, but even for one or two scouts, maybe I don't know. I've seen the Facebook groups where I'm like, I can't imagine doing that for one kid. But we rent a U-Haul, we get there, and typically our council has pallets already loaded for us. It sounds ridiculous. We are literally a small business, and we have parent volunteers that come and help us load it. Our council product team is the best probably in the country, and our product team is loading stuff into our truck. We had our CEO of our council helping us lead stuff and put stuff into our truck. She helped with everyone's, but it was just neat. And then we actually use a church in Nashville that has a pretty big fellowship hall. And we unload the truck. It takes us about an hour and a half into different sections. And we do cookie pickup over the course of a weekend. And scouts and their families come and, quote, shop our boxes. They come and pick up their initial orders. And then we house usually around two booths worth of inventory ourselves. And the cookie booth situation, like knowing how, signing up for a booth, getting people to a booth and the right number of ratios, finding the cookies is a moving target. It has been for the last 2 years. And my co-leader, Amy, has done a remarkable job with the data tracking. We sold this many cookies at the grocery stores, and we sold this many cookies at the hardware stores. And this happened in our small neighborhood booth. And so this is what we should anticipate for next year. But it is a small business. It's a microcosm of what having an MBA, I think, looks like.
Part of me feels excited by this. And part of me is like, never mind, I don't want a super troop. So... how many booths does your troop do roughly in a cookie season?
I can tell you exactly how many we did if you give me about 7 seconds to pull up our spreadsheet. Again, just absolute magic. Okay, we did this year. So we would count a cookie booth as a 2-hour shift at a spot, if that makes sense. So I'm thinking every 2 hours. She has in our spreadsheet that we did 19 booths this year, and 3 of those are multiple, over 20 booths. Not every girl does cookie booths. Some girls just do initial orders. Some girls don't sell, and that's totally fine too. But we staff anywhere between 2 and 4 scouts and then 2 adults at every cookie booth. This year was really ridiculous because it snowed the first week in March in Nashville, which is it's unheard of, I think. So it was very cold and very rainy, and we have the best scouts and families that I think we originally signed up for maybe 8 or 10 shifts, which is plenty to orchestrate. And then those booths didn't do very well because of the weather. And so we had to pivot and do more. So I think she tallied how many hours girls spent at booths individually. And I think the top numbers were 15 and 14 hours in a month of that scout did of booths, which is just like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah. Okay. So but it does sound much more manageable than I think I was expecting, because I feel like my troop ever got, my previous troop was approaching 30 girls, and we definitely did. I was on my way. We had like K-6 and I had 30. Okay, so if I had kept going, we could have ended up there. But anyways, I think probably 12 to 15 booths in a season would be normal for us. And I don't know for sure, I don't remember 100%, but I'm just picturing what my like spreadsheet looked like. And I feel pretty confident that we probably had years that we did 19 or 20 booths as well.
Yep.
So that makes me feel better, because I was thinking like, oh my gosh, this totally would change. Obviously, it would totally change cookie season. But for my troop, I attended almost 100% of the booths that our troop did. Mm-hmm. I love them. I just love cookie season. And I was like, oh my gosh, how would you even do that with more than twice the number of girls? Okay. All right. I feel better. Still do that. All right.
You totally could.
One of the things that I love the most about Girl Scouts is that it doesn't just help girls grow. It helps adults grow in all the same ways. So what is one way you've been impacted or changed through your experience of volunteering for Girl Scouts?
Yeah, so I am an introvert by nature. I think I can fake being a people person a lot, but I do get my energy from being behind the scenes. I think one of the things that Girl Scout leadership has helped me to do is to know how to ask for help. 63 girls is a lot. And then also to build a community myself. And so I think in my first year as the O1 troop leader, I was connected to the previous O1 troop leader, which was great because we worked in the same troop together to same girls, same kind of rowing in the same direction. And she is the bridge for me to the service unit that I was too overwhelmed to even identify with. I've got this many girls I'm trying to figure out and get permission slips for and communicate with families. But growing for me was being able to do some outreach and networking within our Girl Scout kind of bubble. And then the ladies of the service unit really pushed me to bridge out into making these relationships in my community. And I know on a academic level, I understand the value of knowing people in your community, but in practice, I maybe wasn't great at that. And so I think leadership in Girl Scouts has helped me to grow in that. I also now know how to camp. So there's that. Even if you were to look at me camping, you'd be like, man, she's really got it together. And she's actually not on the inside. She's freaking out. But that's another Girl Scout leadership skill, right? Like, I'm going to do what I know how to do, even if on the inside, I'm a little bit scared about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I love that, because I love camping and I actually loved camping as a kid. That was my favorite. Those were my favorite Girl Scout memories. Aww. And I also had a friend who was a Girl Scout friend, but also her family loved to camp. They had a camper and all summer I would go camping with her family. I loved residential camp. I loved troop camp. I loved all kinds of camping. My mom is absolutely a hotel princess. She would 100% not even go camping with the troop. That was for other volunteers to do. And so as a kid, I wouldn't have had those experiences at all if it weren't for Girl Scouts. And then as an adult, what's funny is, as much as I camped as a kid, your comfort level, not just going camping, I think I could probably swing that, but going camping and being responsible for all of these little people while you're camping is, I don't know that I would never have imagined that would be me if it weren't for Girl Scouts. And thank goodness for support of volunteers who are a lot more confident campers, despite the fact that, from what I'm saying, I've literally been camping since I was 5. It still is okay. This feels overwhelming. So, but yeah, it is interesting to realize that it really puts you into situations that you wouldn't otherwise have, which is exactly what you said you recognized as an opportunity for your daughter to have opportunities outside of the classroom, right? And realizing that it does that for us as adults too is really cool. Okay. I want you to think back to the version of you that you were when, I think you said her name was Christina, but the other leader said to you, you should really consider being a level leader. And thinking back to that version of you and what you were thinking and how you were feeling and what you thought about Girl Scouts and what you thought your experience might look like compared to the you now, who's looking at kind of the twilight of your O1 experience, what would you say to that version of you 10 years ago now?
Yeah. First of all, I'd say, don't do it. I'm just kidding. Not at all. I would say as a leader, I jumped into looking at all of the Facebook groups, the Pinterest pages, all the things that we, you know, is out, the opportunity that's out there. Here's how we do a swap. Here's how you can do camping. Here's how you can do all these things, a cookie booth. Here's how to design a cookie booth. There's 100 options. And I would say that the best advice I would give myself in the beginning times is, the kids don't know what you don't do, right? They're not in the Facebook group looking at the multitude of options that you are saying no to. They don't yet know how intricate these things can be. They're 7. So you can rest a little bit and not have to do everything and not have to do everything perfectly. One of the most beautiful things about Girl Scouting is that the girls take ownership of that once they become older scouts. And so while you're giving them small bits of experiences that may not be perfect and polished and Pinterest worthy, maybe giving them the tools that they need to make it their own Pinterest version of those things. And relax a little, Ashley.
Yeah. And somebody else would look at your troop if they could see it. somebody else would look at your troop and see it as Pinterest worthy in ways that theirs isn't, right? Like there are so many ways to do Girl Scouting. And yeah, when you're in one of those, especially the giant Facebook groups and or scrolling Pinterest, it really is, oh my God, there's so much. I even feel that sometimes flipping through, which I know the girls' guides are like so 5 years ago, but oh my, it's fine. But when you're flipping through things like that, like the Girl Scout, and you're looking at this roadmap of here's all the ways to participate in Girl Scouts, and you're planning out, like I've talked a lot about my year plan process, and you have, for me, it was every other week we were meeting during the school year, and you sit down and you look at these meetings, and then you go plug in the things that are seasonal. We know we're going to talk about cookies at this meeting. We know that we're going to do something for Juliet Lowe's birthday at this meeting. We know we're going to have an end of the year party here, and so on and so forth. It's then the number of meetings you have left is so limited in that 1 year calendar, and you look at all of the things that you could do and all the things you want to do, and it's okay, wait, this fills up so fast, and then there's so many more things that we still could do, but we don't have time to fit in. And it's, we have to make decisions about what is the most important to us or the most realistic for us. And it is interesting to realize, I hear so many people talk about in those Facebook groups, my kid has earned every badge and here's this vest where it's just completely full and they have extra vests sewn on, and it's all these, even at the brownie level, this kid has earned everything there is to earn. And meanwhile, I think about my troop and I'm like, okay, but we only really had time to do 8 badges a year, and that plus field trips, plus cookies, plus the activities that the girls wanted to dig deeper on, plus World Thinking Day. It's like, how do you even have time for that? Like, we definitely aren't moving at that pace. And are my girls missing out? And are they missing stuff? And that's the Enneagram 3 talking, probably a lot of with specific to badges. And then it's, you're also hearing people complaining, there used to be so many more badges available. Now the selection is so limited, and they're just, and it's, I don't even have time to do what they're, is. Yeah, I think that is, it's interesting to have those different perspectives. And not to say that if you're one of the people who feels like there's not enough badges and your troop has earned everything and your kid has multiple uniforms sewn together to make like a cape of badges, then that's awesome. And again, nobody's doing it. Like, I'm not, as long as your kids are safe, nobody's doing it wrong. So I'm not, and your adults are safe. So I'm not, this is not like a criticism or a judgment, but it just is interesting how we go internally and just kind of beat ourselves up about the ways we're not doing enough. And I have actually heard that on about this podcast before, where some people have shared over the years that sometimes the way that we talk about Girl Scouting on this podcast makes it feel like, oh man, I just am not even, I feel like I'm not even holding a candle to that. I feel like I'm so far away from that. I feel like that just makes me think about all the ways that I'm not doing enough. And I never obviously want this podcast to come across this way. I think showcasing all the different ways to do Girl Scouts is important, but I also think being realistic about it and knowing that it grows with time, right? If you, I was just reflecting this morning on my very first troop meeting as a leader. And I had just recently seen pictures had come up like in my memories of me and my co-leader after our first troop meeting. We look tired and our hair is messy and we're like giving the camera a thumbs up and we're like, we did it. We had a meeting. And I am trying to remember what we even did. And I think we mostly did an opportunity for us to get to know the girls and the girls to get to know each other. And it was like, there was something with drawing about like things about yourself. And I don't remember if it corresponded to a specific battle. I don't know. And then because I had read and heard and taken trainings, not to make it feel too much like school, then we did a couple of like dance activity videos on YouTube that we like put up on a projector. And I only remember that because I have some pictures of those kids dancing in this classroom we were in. And then I think we finished, I'm not sure if this was the first meeting or second meeting, but I think we finished the first meeting with our own like first investiture ceremony, where the girls each had their own color sand and they poured it in and layered in a vase. And so it was like, okay, now these were originally separate colors and now look at this rainbow together, like it can never be separated again. And we just made it up as we went along and we just did our best. And it was like, I don't know. I don't know these kids. They're strangers. And there's just like this group of kids in front of us that are just waiting to see what we tell them to do. And we don't know what to tell them to do. And it just, it's funny because I think going from that to feeling confident and like a well-oiled machine, and it just takes time and experience. So no matter where you are in the process or what your troop looks like, everybody's looks different. And that's what's beautiful about it. And when it comes to the GSLE principles that we talk about sometimes on this podcast, that's part of why I do that, because it's like literally no matter what activity you're doing, if the kids are safe and they are doing hands-on stuff, cooperative stuff, and they have their own element of girl leadership, it is Girl Scouts and you're doing enough. So hopefully that feels like a pep talk, but thank you so much for your time. I loved this conversation. Yeah. I feel like there was so much really good stuff and kind of reframes and new perspectives and zooming out on things. And how do we create this kind of wonderland, this rainbow wonderland of inclusivity and high impact that we want to create for our girls, but also in a realistic way. And also not just in Girl Scouts, but in our communities. Like you said, it's a microcosm of what's going on in our communities. And so really thinking of it in terms of that feels like the most Girl Scout thing that we could talk about. So I just love it. I adore you. This was such a fun conversation. Thank you so much for your time and for you listening. We'll see
Thanks for having me. Hopefully
next week. Hopefully. I'm doing my best, you guys. Hopefully we'll see you next week.